Preston and Steve Fun Size Podcast.
All right, I need something more interesting than that. I know Rob's on the line, but I need something more interesting than that. I'm going to do this very, very quickly.
We owe it to Rob if he's listening.
Yes.
I hope he's not.
This is the last connoisseur item for you. Fruit Loops tropical cereal now exists.
I thought Fruit Loops with the whole bird motif and everything was supposed to be tropical to begin with.
I agree, but regular Fruit Loops...
That's like a monster version of Count Chocula.
They actually all taste the same. Like every single Fruit Loop, even though it's a different color, tastes the same as the other ones. It's just color. The tropical version features distinct flavors in different colors.
Being what? What is mimicked with these...
The yellow
chemical flavors.
The yellow, orange, and green sweet and multigrain rings are pineapple, banana, orange, and mango flavor.
And jerky.
That actually sounds pretty good. And beef jerky. So that actually sounds pretty good.
Listen.
Pineapple, banana, orange, and mango.
I was, Fruit Loops, not one of my favorite, but I was okay with it.
You hate them?
Yeah, I never liked them.
I'm with you. I don't, it's just the color that's a draw for kids.
It's the joy of eating fruit without eating anything remotely associated with fruit.
Yeah, do you know I had somebody say that to me one time? She was giving her kid, I don't call it Fruit Loops, I don't know, it was something like that. And she goes, well, there's fruit in it. And I was like,
I'm
not kidding you. I am not kidding you. And she was dead serious. And
is this
like,
the same woman who thought that your bags on the airplane flew in a separate aircraft that flew behind the plane?
No, listen, the
Kathy, I got to go. Child Services is here.
Wow.
No.
Okay. No, there's no fruit in Fruit Loops.
I know that.
Yes. I know you know that. Your friend does not know that. All right, that's the last connoisseur story. It was a quick connoisseur, but I wanted to make sure that I got out a couple of food stories before we get into the holiday weekend. All right, let's get him on the line. He's calling and needs some assistance, and we are more than happy to oblige in that regard. So please welcome our good friend, Mr. Rob McElhenney, to the program. Hey, Rob, how are you?
Well, I'm a little bit disturbed. I feel like there's a conspiracy afoot from the breakfast cereal industry, because Fruit Loops has been tropical since like 1982.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Right. There was a whole predication. Right? Yeah, but what was not explained initially when they debuted the product is that every one of the loops, though it's colored differently, is the exact same flavor.
You show me where there is a toucan living on this earth that isn't in a tropical environment.
It's true. It's true.
You're right.
So just by nature, and I guarantee you that the tropical ones probably taste exactly the same as the other ones. But I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah, no, you're a wise man.
Rob.
This is the Fruit Loop lobby.
It's powerful.
I want to start by thanking you. I asked a request of you. I try not to bother our celebrity friends, but my wife is on the Education Foundation for our school district, and you and Caitlin did a video for the graduates of Souderton Area High School. You did way more than I asked for, so I really appreciate that. That was very cool of you to do that.
No problem. Honestly, you guys have been so great for us, and we were happy to do it. We made a number of those kinds of videos, and you know, everybody's got their own struggles and sufferings that they're going through. We feel especially bad for all those kids out there that had graduated this year, and it's supposed to be a special time for them, and they missed out on it, which is a bummer.
Well, listen, your cause near and dear to you, Cora. Has been having some real struggles as well. Obviously, the golf outing's not going to happen this year, which is a big fundraiser for them. But they've taken a big financial hit, correct?
Yes. Look, like everybody has, but especially organizations in social services. And these are the exact organizations that we all need right now, and people at greatest risk need. And they're struggling. So you know, we're looking to raise as much funds as we possibly can, and also be respectful of the fact that everybody is in a difficult and uncertain time right now. So
yeah, it is the predicament, because there are these very needy, very worthwhile charities, and you're approaching it the way respectfully, because there are some people, a lot of people are out of work and so on and so forth. We can tell you that we've had one charity event here through the station, through our sister station, and man, people are generous. They'll step up regardless. So that's very encouraging. And you always feel It always feels weird to go with, you know, hand in hand when you're trying to say, oh, can you help out, especially knowing what everyone's going through. But it's so inspiring to see that people will rise to the challenge. And Cora is so essential. You turned us on to it, and the stories that we've learned and what Cora is responsible for is so necessary with all the tumult and all the stuff that is going on. This is a real, they you know, boots on the ground, get it done sort of a movement. And can you explain what Cora is about to people who are unfamiliar with it?
Yeah, I mean, it's an organization that works mostly with families and kids who are at greatest risk, whether that is in the lower level justice system, whether it's behavioral issues, whether it's learning disabilities, or if it's just in need of community support and family support, and those are the services that they offer all over the city of Philadelphia. They're based up in the Northeast, but they really do offer these services everywhere. And a lot of families depend on these services to help raise their kids and to raise the next generation of Philadelphians. And so it's something that's near and dear to me because my father worked there for 35 years. I worked there as a camp counselor for years, and I saw firsthand what they're able to accomplish. So I try to lend my support wherever I can.
It's interesting, too, in times like this, Rob, because the needs go up and the people's ability to donate goes down. So it's a double-edged sword, and it's a double whammy for organizations like Cora, really for so many charity organizations. But Steve's right. Once you ask people, all you have to do is make that ask, and people are willing, if they're able to do so, to make the donations. And you said in the past, and I find this remarkable, but that you wouldn't be the person you are if not for a place like Cora Services.
That's right. That's right. I mean, they were certainly seminal in helping raise me, just because by nature of the relationship that I had with them, and obviously with my father. But I saw firsthand how it was affecting other people and the community at large. So, look, the truth is that with all this crowdsourcing now, I think people are really getting a good idea of how just putting in $5, $10, $2 makes a difference. We did a lot of fundraising over the past 4 months for different organizations, and I would say 90% of the donations that would come in would be $10, $15, $20, $5, and that was really heartwarming because you realize that these are people who are struggling and they probably don't have $5 to give or $10 to give or $20 to give. And yet they do anyway because their hearts are so big and they care so much about the community. So those are the people I'm trying to reach out to now and to respectfully request, to consider Cora if you're considering giving.
Yeah, no, and it's honestly, I love this. I was talking to a friend of ours who is one of the main people involved with the Big Brothers and Big Sisters. And to me, that Cora is a very similar sort of thing in that it's, you know, excuse me, it's getting people, you know, people who are most in need and younger people. Who just need that little hand up. I remember, I forget the young man's name, but he had a speech issue, and there he was speaking at one of the golf outings, and basically doing a little bit of stand up comedy, and it was amazing to see where he had come from and to realize what his life would have been without the intervention of Cora. So this is, you know, your heart aches for people who. Save but for that one handout to make a difference, you know, their lives could change dramatically. And so in this time, you know, so many things are now set in motion, Rob, with the lack of funding that will have dramatic effects for years to come. That, again, as you say, if people do have the wherewithal to do it, it does make a difference. We've seen the results of what Cora does.
Yes. Yeah, and it's really it really is just coming down to having those personal experiences and seeing kids like that who, yeah, he had a severe stutter and speech impediment. He was riddled with anxiety, couldn't speak in front of one person, let alone 10. And within a few years of support, he was able to stand in front of, I don't know how many people were in that room, 300.
Yeah.
And did a routine.
Yeah.
I mean, and you really see, like, when it comes down to those personal stories, like, they're doing that with hundreds of kids, if not thousands, all over the city. And you look at somebody like that and you say, wow, you know, what track was he on and what track is he on now? And that's what Cora can provide, is that track to the future.
So how do people give? How do they donate? What's the best way to do it?
Well, let's go to coraservices.org.
Okay.
And you can read a little bit more about what Cora does. And I think that's important before you give money, just to recognize how essential they are, and there's a donation page right there.
Okay. Yeah, so chorusservices.org/give if you want to go right to the donation page. The number is 215-342-7660, 215-342-7660. And they have announced, Rob, the golf outing for next year. So if we're on track and in a better place a year from now, it'll be May 24th, and it'll be at the Philly Cricket Club next year. So that's something you might want to set the date aside now, May 24th, 2021.
And we'll make sure we post all this on our social media and on our website as well. So we'll push that message for you, Rob. But what's going on with Mystic Quest? You guys had to shut down production, we know, earlier this year.
Yeah, we were in the first week of shooting, and we had to shut down that Wednesday or Thursday, and so we were able to shoot an episode in quarantine, which was great. But now we're just trying to figure out how we can get back to work.
Do you have a projected date when things? Because I know some of the movies are going back into production, and some of the projects are moving along. But do you have a projected date where the show resumes?
You know, everybody seems to think we have a date. I had 12 conversations that start with, okay, we have a plan, but this could change at any moment.
Yeah. Any moment.
And so all those movies that talk about going back, I've watched them just get pushed and pushed and pushed and changed. And, you know, I just don't know how or why this became a political issue, like why people won't wear masks. I just truly don't understand.
I don't either.
We're watching it surge in California, and we had flattened the curve, and that just got thrown into the garbage. So
hey,
we'll see.
Does this the scenario that we're in right now? Has it caused you to have any creative ideas for shows, plot lines, or anything along those lines?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I've just been sitting here writing.
Yeah.
That's all we've been doing. So. We had to throw out the entire second season of Mythic Quest because it just doesn't make sense anymore considering how different the world is.
Oh, wow.
So we rewrote the entire season. We finished up with that. Sonny got picked up for another 2 more years. So we're going to go write that, and that's just going to kind of write itself, I think.
Is there comedy to be mined, especially for a show like Sonny, but Mythic Quest too, with social movements, with Black Lives Matter, with pandemics? You know, how do you dance on that delicately, be respectful, but also look for some comedic opportunities?
Yeah, the same way we always have, because we have been swimming in dangerous waters on Sonny for a really long time, and that's kind of the point of the show, and I think people understand that, so the audience gets what we're going for. I have a lot of people ask me, like, hey, how do you get away with some of the stuff you get away with when other shows don't seem to? And, well, A, I don't think we're really getting away with anything. I think that the way we approach it, which is an eye towards the satire, just the hypocrisy of all different facets of American culture, that the audience gets that. And they understand what we're trying to do. And though the characters may be misogynist and homophobic and racist sociopaths, it's very clear that the show is not.
Yeah.
You're looking at it through the prism of these crazy people.
There was a video that John Cleese put back out. He'd done it a couple decades ago, and it was concerning, you know, they're trying to get Fawlty Towers taken off. And Fawlty Towers is the character that he played on the show is a complete indictment of people who are bigoted and so on and so forth. And, you know, he's saying, can't you see the point of this? You guys were sort of always... You know, that was always the mission, is through these characters realize, you know, the absurdity of a lot of the viewpoints. One of the things I have to say is, and I've gone to it, this is a well I go to constantly, the bloopers, the outtakes of every season of It's Always Sunny has some of the best stuff. And one in particular is, and I'd forgotten about this episode, you're on this this exercise bike. You know exactly what I'm talking about, with this sort of phallus that jumps up and sort of is supposed to help in the exercise process, and you can't keep it together.
It's a motivating tool, yeah.
I mean, is there any one moment in particular out of all of the all of that stuff, that you know, bloopers and outtakes, that stands out as a moment where you felt you would never regain composure?
Well, it's interesting that you bring up that episode for many reasons, but one of them... being that particular episode, I think it's one of our highest rated episodes, on IMDb, and I think it was one of the episodes that got the biggest response, certainly from the LGBTQ community, positively.
Yeah.
Truly positively, because my character comes out of the closet in that episode and stays out of the closet. And so on one hand, you have this like incredibly profane and ridiculous implement of comedy in the episode that really, if we handled it one way, could have gone sideways. And yet, it's still, in the end, people were able to understand what we were going for.
Right.
And I think it really spoke to a lot of people. And I had, I don't know, 10 or 15,000 messages at that night of that episode.
That's wild.
Really spoke to people, which is wild.
Yeah. I would love to see outtakes from the Time's Up episode. And, you know, and anybody who's never watched an episode of It's Always Sunny, watch that episode in particular. It's hilarious. I would love to see, you know, when Dee comes into the conference room going, time's up, time's up, time's up. I would love to see how many takes did that take, if you recall?
Well, yeah, I mean, we just thought it was, if we were going to do an episode about that, about how this toxic male behavior is finally getting called out, that there's probably no one on television who's more toxically male than these four three characters.
Yeah.
And that D would really like take full advantage of that, notwithstanding like recognizing her own toxicity, which does come to light in that particular episode. And that scene, which is just her entrance, she was practicing that for like a week. She read the script that would just come into the like living room, like when I was sitting there with my kids, and she'd be like, tabs up, tabs up. And I was like, is this real? Like, am I getting called out right now? Are you going to call the press? Or is just...
Well, can I ask a question about the Falcon Punch part of that episode? What did you guys use? What sort of apparatus did you guys, or are you that strong?
Oh, to lift her in the air? No, that's me. I lift, yeah, no.
It's just an amazing display of agility.
Yeah. I think I lifted her up about, at least 6.5 feet.
With one arm. Yeah, amazing.
Rob, not that you need my praise or our praise, but the quarantine episode of Mythic Quest really was great. It was really touching, and I don't know if it was difficult for you guys to write or put together, but the way that you guys handled it and took this show about male toxicity and turned it into something that was really touching and sweet. So nice work.
Well, if you think that I or we as a community don't need you to tell us how great we are, then you're not paying attention. Yeah.
That's one thing that's been sadly missing in your industry is accolades and awards.
Yeah, it really truly is like the reason for the entertainment industry to exist. It's just a bunch of people all over the world who were like, I really need to get people's not only attention, but praise.
Yeah, okay.
So anytime you're willing to give it, I'm willing to take it.
Okay. All right. So when I was vacationed last year, I went to like Grand Canyon, Zion, and I had a guide. Right. So we hired this guide, and he was a Mormon who lived in Utah, and he is a huge, huge fan of all of it. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. So when he found out I was from Philadelphia, he was like, "Oh man, I love the show," and blah. And I was like, "Well, I happen to be in a couple of those episodes," and I had just even said that he knows every episode by title, which is I thought amazing. So I just want to let you know that you have a huge contingent of fans in Mormon, Utah.
Wow.
You never know where they are. I mean, over 15 years, it's funny, like how many people, I think I mentioned this to you guys before, like how many people, writers we have who were not allowed to watch the show. They were in grade school when Sunny came out. And yet if people were in their 30s or 40s when Sunny came out, they're now in their 50s. So we're spanning generations. We might as well span the entire religious or socioeconomic spectrum.
Sure, sure. Hey, Rob, this might seem like an absolute pipe dream, especially the way the world is now, but once things do normal out, and maybe years from now, do you ever see a day where you guys take the show on the road again like you did with the Nightman and all that? I mean, because you guys have kids now and it's a whole other ball game, but God, that was so special and awesome, you know?
It was really fun, and it was like our chance to be like rock stars for a couple of weeks, and we because this is also like when we did that, which is I think coming up on 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We just didn't have a direct interface with the audience. I mean, even social media wasn't as big as it is now. And so you never know when you're doing a TV show if people are really watching it or what their response is. So all of a sudden you go out there to a live auditorium and everybody is not only singing along the songs but mouthing the words of dialogue through an entire 24-minute episode of television.
Yeah.
And so that was just so eye-opening to us and charged us up. And then we were ready to do it again, and then everybody started having kids, and we're like, well, we can't bring these infants. Like, it's not fun to bring infants to a rock
concert. Right, yeah, right.
So then, like, traveling around the country with, like, infants, that's lame. So, but now they're all getting older. And so it might be the kind of thing where we might do this show for another, I don't know, decade.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, these kids are gone. They're out of my house.
Yes. They'll have time. Again. Freedom.
There you go. Yeah, that's every impetus to be an empty nester is to get that tour back out on the road again.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we did talk about, and I don't know when we were going to do it, but we had some interest in, which is wild, is talking to the Link.
Okay.
There was interest from the Link that we would perform at the Link.
Oh my God!
And we were talking to them, and then obviously things got a little haywire last year. But we were planning something.
Wow!
And people seem to think we can pack that place, which
would it be again the Nightman, or did you have something else in mind?
Well, the Nightman is 12 years old. I think
right.
We'd have to update that a little bit, but yeah, I think it would be a spectacular. If we're gonna do it in Lincoln Financial Field, then it better be spectacular.
Yeah,
Kevin Hart did it. You guys could do it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Guns N' Roses did it. Metallica. You can do that.
All right. Well, listen. The main thing that we want to get from this conversation is the fact that Cora needs help. This is an essential organization. They're having trouble, and as Rob had said, you know, if you are in that giving position, and even if it's $5 or $10, whatever, if you are going to give, he'd like you to consider Cora. It was essential in his life and so many other people. And by the way, so some people are texting. I'm already seeing. Donations come in that we're seeing via our texts, but it's Cora, C-O-R-A, Cora, services.org, or you can just go to PrestonSteve.com. The link is right there. It'll take you right to it, and you can donate. So we urge you to do that if you certainly can. Well, listen, man, thanks for the call. We'll do what we can to get the word out, and obviously, you know, stay safe and give our best to the family and crew, all right?
Thank you. You guys are the best, and hopefully I'll see you in person sometime soon.
That'd be great. Have a great holiday weekend. Thank you. Rob McElhenney, guys.
Yeah.
Take care, Rob. That show's so great. We were just... when Casey had mentioned the Falcon Punch scene, he was talking about where Rob reaches down to Caitlin and grabs her by the crotch and lifts her one arm up into the air. It's hilarious.
There's an exchange in that where Charlie's talking about an uncle who molested him, and he's talking to the person who's running the thing, and he goes, he didn't really fully, you know, he didn't fully molest me, and then the rest of the crew's going, oh, no, he got in there.
Wow. It's such a great show. It's wrong on so many levels in a great way.
Want more Preston and Steve? Get the whole show podcast or Bizarre Files at PrestonandSteve.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.